So we ran short last time, but I know I need to make sure we mention these. We've got some volunteer committee members, Dr. Ryan Rhodes of CSU, Larry Hooker, CSU Extension, Nita Howard with the Conroe Youth Council, Emma Jordan with Jordan Angus, who just shut the door on us, Jim Magnus with Magnus Farms, and Matt Crawler with Carter State Land Board. Thank you to our volunteer committee members. Special thank you to Brooke Larson, the Raymore FFA Chapter's advisor, and the members, of course, of the FFA Chapter we just recognized, and of course, Ben Burden there as well. If you haven't seen his book for the Rangeland Judging Handbook, he's got some limited supply. He already sold out.
No, there's still some.
There's still some left. I'm telling you guys, it's the most in-depth book I've seen put together, and it's really good to have. So you go, when you're on the pasture, to see something, you want to know what it is, that book's got it in it. And then you can find out you want to get rid of it. It's something bad. So we'll just move on here real quick here. Best practices for finding and leasing land. And our guest is Jeff Turnell. He's an agricultural business management economist with Colorado State University. His professional interests focus primarily on business succession and estate planning, financial management, risk management, income tax management, and also human resource management. Jeff has addressed agricultural audiences and worked with more than 10,000 farm families throughout the state of Colorado and 24 other states, I understand, and other countries of Australia, Belarus, never been there before, heard about the tractor, Canada, Ireland, and New Zealand. Currently sits on the National Farm Income Tax Task Force, say that three times fast, and other state national committees. Jeff has authored a book on human resources management and has numerous fact sheets and other educational materials and 12 online self-study courses. I probably need to take a couple of those. But how about a hand for Jeff Turnell?
Well, thank you. Matt, you need to sit up here. This is not church where you sit in the back pew, you know, or Sunday school. I don't have a yardstick. Okay, thank you for inviting me to speak. We're going to talk about leases. Leases have a number of uses and growing number of uses with some changes in tax law, with changes in estate planning, etc. So we're going to go over some of those. So what is a lease? Start at the very beginning. It just allows someone, not the owner, to make use of that asset for a fee. And it is a limited amount. It is a limited term. So you use it for 1 year, 50 years, whatever that is, and it's stated clearly. This part up here, okay, there's no little light, that's fine. That is critical. The tax law requires these things to happen. It cannot be a conditional agreement. Sales contract, we've run into a number of these, and what happens is if the IRS views that so-called lease as a conditional sales contract, then you cannot write off that or deduct in the year that payment is made those payments. It goes, then it looks like a sale or a purchase. So then you treat it with Section 179 or something else. You can never receive title. There cannot be an option. Okay, Brian. Hold it up. This is like the old days when we'd hold up the rabbit ears to kids and stand over there. Some of us are old enough to remember those days. You cannot, that one, that second bullet from the bottom, in that lease agreement, there cannot be a stated price that is less than fair market value. Else it's looked at as a sale and not a lease. So quite often, as we're using leases, we say, okay, you can buy it for 50 cents on the dollar, or set the price at 10,000, and the fair market value at the end of that lease when you can pull that trigger is 15,000. You would have to go back and amend your tax returns to look at that as a purchase. quite useful. We use them, especially as I do a lot of estate planning and succession planning now, we use those for mom and dad to transfer ownership of especially cows and equipment, those depreciable assets, less so with the land, to the heir, son or daughter. And what we do, as an example, on the cows, dad would lease the cows to son. And son would, within that agreement, son would keep, let's say it's a 100 cow herd, he would maintain those cows, that cow herd size, he would have to have the replacements. Dad gets the cold cow sales, which helps with his retirement income. And over a 5 to 7 year period, because dad's going to sell 20% per year, or 15%, whatever the normal cull rate is for you, then gradually the cow herd is owned all by the son because he is keeping the replacement heifers. Dad has spread out the capital gains because he's only claiming 15 to 20% or whatever percent replacement in those cull cows. So it works really good to move the capital gains down the road to gradually shift over ownership of those assets without a large upfront cost, and mom and dad have some income for the retirement years. So you can lease cows, cash lease, we all understand that, and then we can also share those. On the cash lease, it's pretty simple. We also have on our CSU website, and you can see it's the first line there, estimating their cash lease agreements for cows. Just a simple Excel spreadsheet to help you determine what is the fair rent for those. Couple of different ways. On a share lease, I quite often hear, well, the tenant or the person leasing those cows is going to pay or get 90% of the calf profit. The owner gets 10. It tends not to be very fair. What I've, in the numbers that I've run, and I've got a spreadsheet, if we have time I can show you what that looks like, it turns out to be about 85-15% is the most equitable, depending on who pays for what cost. In this assumption, most of the cost, 86% of them, are paid for by the tenant or the person owning that. And of course, this is available on our ABM website. I cannot say this enough. Lease agreements need to be written. I don't care what you are leasing. Identify the timeline. Who pays what? And it's in small print there, salt and mineral, tenant, new fence construction, owner, which are typical. I'm going to show you some data from a survey we did, or we do on a regular basis, that shows that that's the most common thing. How are those leases going to be calculated? If you're on a rate of gain, this is really important. I also have run into problem or talked with producers in which there's a concern about, okay, you turn the cows in the 1st of June, when do you turn the bulls in? And all of a sudden the AUMs go up. Now the landowner may say, well, we gotta up the rent because the bulls are in for those days. Now that's not on a rate of gain, but if it's on an AUM basis or a dollar per head, per day, whatever that might be. And when are you going to make the payments? You going to do it just when you sell? Are you going to do it, whatever the case may be? This is important to have in this written agreement, especially when we're looking at estate plans and succession plans. We need to have that in that transitional period. So, every 3 years, I and Norm Dahlstedt have conducted a survey starting in 2010, I believe is the first one we did. We did 2010, 2013, 2015. We did it in 16, but we collected data for 2015 and 2016. And then we just did one last year collecting data for 18 and 19. The 19 survey, we sent out about 1,800 surveys across the state. The cattlemen's, the wool growers, lenders, others are giving us those names. We're doing this all by mail, and we get about 25% back. In this case, we had 392 usable sets of responses, meaning they were complete and there weren't some obvious errors in there. Now you're going to see some data that show, when I show the high and the low, that you're going, what the heck was going on here? And there may be some explanations for that, there may not, but we use that data. This is, according to the statisticians, these numbers are statistically valid. So we're getting a really good representation. We divide this according to the land board districts. I believe these are correct, Matt?
Those are the USDA districts.
They're the USDA districts. So what you're going to see is the USDA districts, not yours, because we have, I grabbed this map. Northwest, Northeast, you can see where you are as we go around. We did it by district. We have county data, but we did not report that. So acres leased. You can see the average, median, and mode. In the southwest, 1,000 acres was very common, mode being the most commonly reported size. The southeast, 7,000 acres in each lease. That doesn't mean per pasture, but within that lease agreement. I don't use averages all that much. I like to use the mean because it's a cleaner average. Average is kind of like putting your left foot in ice water and your right foot in boiling water, and you're theoretically just right in the middle, but yet you're uncomfortable. So mean and then mode. And of course, East Central in 2019, we had only 70 versus 320 in those lease agreements, so a bit smaller, and then you can see them across there. And if you have any questions as you look at this data, don't throw anything at me. I reserve that right for my wife, but say something. Don't be shy there. How many acres are required per AUM for a six-month grazing period? When Matt and I set this up originally back in 2009, this is one of the questions they were looking at since for the State Land Board, a six-month grazing period. Any numbers stick out there? Southwest, look at that. In 2018, someone reported, or many people reported, 100 acres per AUM. Well, holy smokes. Well, when I went back and looked at, and I have no idea who reported or who didn't, but I looked at some of those counties and it's pretty rough terrain. And we see that in the responses from like Rout County, in that area where we had our summer grass, it's rough. So those pastures may be very large in acres, but you can't graze those hillsides well with cattle. I look at the median and the mode generally, you know, we're talking 10 to 15 acres per cow for AUM for that 6 month grazing period. It's what is being reported to us. So on this one in 2018, dollars per acre for those leases. This is for privately owned, non-irrigated grass. Someone in the state was paying $10 an acre. So many of these leases are probably next to Denver, Grand Junction. There may be some specific reasons for that geographically. There are some of them that I've heard some numbers not in addition and outside of the survey, people were paying high because it was a father-son or a family situation. So we saw high numbers and low numbers there. But these are, I mean, basically we're talking across Colorado, the most common is $1 an acre. If you get down into southeastern Colorado, it's $5 an acre. East Central, 10. Of course, up in Moffat, Routt County in the Northwest, you're talking a little bit more at 3. This, on the lowest for the state of Colorado, which was in the Southwest, this was on a, if I recall correctly, it was a 78,000 acre lease. So it's probably a fixed amount spread out, and this is the calculation for that. If you look for 2019, you see a few different numbers, but you and the respondents may differ. Some people responded only for 18 or only for 19. Some responded for both. But you can see for last year, we were paying anywhere from $1 to $10. With 3 being the most common if it was leased on a per acre basis. If you look at it on a dollars per AUM basis, $20 is going to cover it across the state for 2018. Matt and I were talking, what I need to do, and I haven't done it yet, is look at what those have done over that time period. I know we have seen $24, $32. Some of us remember 2002 when lease rates, if you could find grass, skyrocketed. It was ugly. That was a bad year. People were begging for grass and would pay anything rather than sell their other spouse. I'm still trying to figure that one out, you know, and it's on a cold winter day, do you want your wife or do you want that 1,250 pound cow to snuggle up with? Let's look at the mean. We're a little bit lower than the most common, but the mean or the average is, you know, 17 to 1850. It's real common across the state. And you can pick out your numbers. In 19, high in the Northeast, which is, I find that all the time, those in this northeastern quadrant or portion of the state tend to pay higher prices for grass than they do the other places in the state. Northwest, southeast, southwest, that western slope is lower. Any questions on this stuff? Anyone disbelieve this number? You do. What are you thinking? Am I low, high, or just I'm low? What should they be, would you say? For what part of the state? The which, Southwest, okay? What would be a common number for down there, would you say?
30.
There you go. We're good. Okay? And we saw lots of 30. I mean, the Southwest, we saw some $70 an AUM. And we saw 8. But statistically speaking, we're talking 22 as an average, and 20 for a mean and a mode, those most common numbers. Now, these are the respondents. There's always those people paying or receiving rents that did not respond or did not get the survey. But your $30 is well taken. Anywhere else, the numbers are different than I'm showing up here. I'm going to guess almost everywhere the numbers are slightly different.
But Jeff, isn't it dependent on what services come with?
Oh yeah, let me talk about that. Absolutely, and it depends on who's doing what. And we saw everything across the board. And I have a slide coming up that will talk about who generally pays for what. Who pays for what? Next slide. Good job.
See?
So who pays for fencing? This is the maintenance. In 2018, the owner paid for, that should be down, 49% or half of the materials and 25% of the labor. The tenant paid for rest. Some of it was simply shared. When you get to the new fence, this other, anyone know what the other is? Might be?
Neighbor.
Neighbor? Equip. Is generally what it's going to be. So you're still talking on new fence in, you know, two-thirds of the time the owner's paying for the materials. And about 20, and about half of the labor to build that new fence. So the tenants, if they're long term, we're seeing more of that, where the tenant will pay that. Who pays the landlord fencing? Tenant pays that. So someone that, and we didn't include public lands in this, so the school sections were not included. Who supplies the water? Typically, the owner supplies the water. Now, those where the tenant is tend to be hauled water. If we look at new pipelines, this is where the other gets really high. Equip is going to pay a lot of these. New water tanks, same thing. The earthen water tanks. So we have some dams there. And then the non-earthen, it drops a little bit, but you know, it's kind of, owner pays a bit more, but the tenant pays quite a bit on these non-earthen dams, take some tanks in there, whatever the case may be. Other questions on this? On the data? Okay, I'm going to, does anyone know where this picture is? This is from Northwestern Colorado.
Great.
This is on the Little Snake River. So. So I have a question back for you on in the Southwest. You're saying $30 an AUM. Is that what it should be? That's reasonable. What was it 10 years ago?
12.
What caused the increase?
Cost of everything.
Yeah, but if everything's, if I'm the cow owner and I'm leasing that grass, my costs have gone up. Why should I pay more for grass? I have less money.
That's a one-sided view.
Absolutely, I'm the cow owner. If I'm the landowner, $30 may not be enough.
True.
I'm that, excuse me, ladies, I'm the widow lady in the nursing home. And I own this grass, it's been in my family. I need that money to go up.
I agree.
So you've had a discussion. No, you just pay the going rate. How many pay going rate? What's the going rate? That's the most common thing we do. What is it doing? We don't have those discussions. What is fair? And this is really small to see. But if you look at this, or have your grandkids download it for you, and you enter things in all the little yellow boxes where there's blue colored font, like here, put in your information. Pasture costs, etc. You know, who's paying what? For example, this is going to be the owner or the tenant. So here's the total cost. Who pays those percentages? Do you pay for all of the marketing or the livestock supplies, meaning fly tags or ear tags or syringes, whatever that may be? The owner pays zero. You can see in this case, the tenant is the cow owner leasing that grass is paying all of those variable costs. I want to point out this section, and we as cow owners often forget this section. This is the depreciation and investment cost in those cows. What's the depreciation cost? Those cows are going down in value. Anyone priced cows in the last 2 weeks? If you want capital losses, this is a good time to do it, generally. Buying cows is a better deal today than it was 6 months ago, isn't it? And along those lines, as an aside, we do have a spreadsheet that is called What You Can Afford to Pay for a Cow, to help you calculate that. And I have yet to see a $2,000 cow pay for herself. Ever. $4 calves, maybe. I have yet to see $4 calves, and I've been around a fair number of years. Not as long as some of you, but quite a few. So this is really important. So it summarizes it. This section of the table here summarizes that, so that you can look at, in this case, 86% of all costs are being paid for by the cow owner, the person leasing those cows. The cow owner is paying 14%. Now, the revenues. Because up above, you determine the percentage, your calf crop percentage, and all of that kind of stuff. You got 20 on a herd of 100. You have 21 steers, 15 heifers. I guess this is a 50 cow herd. 21 steers, 13 heifers. You're going to carry over and then sell as a yearling one heifer that got culled from those replacements. Culled cows. And in this case, the operator did not get the culled cows. It went over to dad or the other owner of those cows. Same with the operator paid for bulls or AI. In this case, we use bulls, going to cull one, and it matches. Fairly straightforward, but it's that conversation that says, hey, this 90-10 won't work. Or whatever it is, 75-25. And you can do the same thing if you have crops, but since we're talking about beef cattle, this is the spreadsheet I'm showing. There's also a tab to help you if you are cash leasing those cows. This is an interesting result. You plug it in, and there are typically three methods that we use to determine what would be a cost. So the owner of the cow, if he wants to recover all of his costs, needs $178 in this example. Doesn't matter, it's the range that I'm going to show you. If you look at the person leasing the cows, what is his net returns after his cost? $79. So you can range from 176 to 79.
He just switched the cord real quick.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
That was getting annoying.
I could go without it, but it wouldn't be recorded.
I'll try it again. All
right. Test.
Nope. Yep. Oh, there it is. Hey. There we are. Okay.
I also want to talk about this number here. Annual cow cost. It's $700 a cow per year, a reasonable number? What is it?
Probably something over 1,000. It should be 900.
900? Good number? Can people live with 900? What's causing that to be so high besides your $30 grass? Because there, if you think about it, for 6 months, that's $180 right there. Now, ownership of that land, what does that cost you if you owned it? Maybe more. If you were to go buy grass, it's going to be, Ben, you were in southeastern Colorado a long time. Same time I was. Leonard, you can say this. When you got there, what was grass selling for?
Probably $250 an acre.
I remember $100 grass.
I got there after that.
You got there after that. Okay. What is it today? $450? $500 for grass?
If you can buy it.
If you can find it? Same period. Say I was there before 1990 in Southeast. Let's go 1990 to today. How much is grass? If you were to buy it, what would pasture cost you? What did it cost?
Buy the property to own it.
If you're going to buy grass, what did it cost? $100 an acre?
With or without minerals.
No minerals, just the grass.
Sorry.
And back in 1990, we didn't have many wind towers either. You know, that is another issue that can be a problem. I mean, not so much with cows once they're used to it, but on crops, we've seen some reduction in yields. Research is showing that from those wind towers. There's a strong correlation there. But that first year you put those cows out there, they may not like that noise either. We've all had cows the first time on pasture of any kind, and it can get ugly, or yearlings can get ugly, but they get used to it. So we're at $900. We have $900. What part of the state are you in? Northeast. So we go from northeast to southwest, and it's still $900. Anyone lower? No one's lower. Okay, that's good to know, because $900. Well, how long are you feeding those cows? Hay.
Six months.
You paying? What is hay bringing now? Cow hay. 200. I mean, they're part of that driving up of those costs. But this is a critical number that you need to know. What that is. Is it 900? Has anyone calculated their actual cost to know what it is? You have. Are you at 900?
Yeah. Where? About 925.
925. And in what part of the state?
Right here.
Anyone calculated the 700?
1785.
When? 1985. Yeah.
I didn't have to buy any hay.
You didn't buy hay.
I stopped buying.
Okay?
This grandma just tested protein at 7.8, January 15.
Wow. And he had grass. That's good. That's good. What was it in 1995 when we had 50 cent calves? Do we want to go back to 50 cent calves? Do we want to go back to dollar calves? No. Because we're having to pay $900 for those cows. Does that include, on that 925, does that include a cost for ownership of that cow? Or is that just the variable cost?
Yeah, just variable cost.
Just variable cost. So you need more than $1,000 a calf to break even. Because it's going to cost you $200 a year to own that cow. So now your costs are at $1,125. Now we can drop that $200 of ownership cost by buying these $500 cows. $600. But we already have those $2,000 cows in the herd, right? Too many of them. But guess what? We didn't pay taxes when we bought them, did we? Because we section 179 those buggers. So we section 179, and then we sold them. Guess what? All capital gains. We paid taxes on those bad girls. Man. How do you cut those? Since you've calculated your cost, I'm going to pick on you. How do you drop those costs?
Get rid of the cows.
Okay, we take that out of the equation. You're going to keep the cows. How do you cut those costs?
Feed.
Labor. So you're going to work for less? You're going to fire who is I won't repeat what he's thinking. Now, that's easier said than done if your hired man is actually your hired wife. Oh, he's a son. That's not easy either, is it? He's going, oh, man, Dad. Labor, feed accounts on cows for about 40% of your costs. And a $200 hay, if you pay that, it's going to jack that up a little bit. And in some places, if you are in, the western slope primarily, you're talking mountain country, and you're going to feed for 6 months. At least. And you hope it doesn't snow. So where that picture was taken, my last picture, where I grew up, I have seen the roads closed on July 5th due to snow. Right outside our front door. County road was closed. 2 different years I saw it snow. Well, that's a little tough if it sticks around. I hope you have enough grass and you don't have to worry about it. But if the snow came the end of August, which it can, then you start feeding early. So, okay, you can't fire your hired man, who's your son. You can't fire your wife, who is your other hired man. You have feed. What else can you do? What this tells me, you can't cut your cost. There's only one other number you have to change. Revenue. Now, you can always do like this gentleman did and stockpile hay. Buy that $100 hay. Keep it for a year or so. Probably 2-year-old hay. Maybe 3-year-old hay in a number of times. So you cut those costs there. You got to increase revenues. How do you do that?
Good job.
Go get a job.
in town. Well, that's what she's doing because she's selling the cows. Does the husband go with that? The cows?
Sure.
He's going to town. So you got to increase revenues. How do you gain income on those calves? Sharp pencil. Do you feed them or do you not feed them? It's easier when you're in Weld County to put them in a lot than if you are in Montezuma County, Route County. We don't have many feedlots on the western slope. It's a long ways to corn. You keep them until they're fat. What do you do? Feedlots are expensive now. Their costs have gone up too. Putting cattle in lots is expensive. Is that a good move for you or not? How many of you sell directly to the consumer? Few of you? Profit there?
No.
Can we? You say not. How long ago was 1985? Is there a profit in there? Yes. There can be. But you got to make changes. Which also may mean changes, and this is really, I hate to even bring this up, but I'm going to. May have to change your calving season. Holy smokes. I've just stepped in and out. What do you mean you're going to have fall calving herds? One question. Did a research study in Los Animas County, south central. We had a traditional calving herd. We looked at those, and we looked at May, June calving, June, July, August, September. Which herd, based on calving period, made the most money? Not down there.
Not down there.
Not down there. June, July. It came down to when did the grass come? Now, on some individual ranches, you know, because you get those summer rains. Now, there were some ranches where August, September was better because they were just, their rains came, they were in a place where the rains came a little bit later, but they had to explore it. And a lot of ranches around the state and around the country have multiple calving periods. Got to look at that. And if you're going to sell directly to the consumer, that may be important to have calves ready throughout the year. So anyway, I got way off on another track. I'm sorry?
We're out of time. Matt says he's ready to go.
Yes. So I want to thank you for your input and your attention and your questions. I appreciate it very much. And with that, I'm going to turn it back to you.
Hurry along that much.
Oh no! Are there any other questions? Yes, sir.
What happens when you figure in freight on AUMs?
Freight on AUMs?
Like, if you figure in what your freight costs is to get those cows that lease out.
Uh-huh.
I mean, a lot of guys probably lease, you know, acres that backed up to their place. Guys that truck them 100 miles or 200 miles to get them. What, you know?
You need to add that in to that cost. But there's also another problem, and you all know this. And we've seen it happen in the drought years, especially when we were trucking cattle a long ways. Grass types change, do they not? Grasses, if you're trucking those cows, say from, let's go to
Eastern Kansas?
Yes. Change a lot. So now you have problems, if you're, especially on cows. Are you having death loss on calves? Are you having reduced conception rates? Are you having not only loss of calves, but reduced calves that are not born yet? We have miscarriages, etc. What's happening there? Another cost to go with that. Actually, you bring up a good point, because I have a spreadsheet, of course, on that ABM website that will help you plug in those numbers and see what that true cost is. Not the $30 of AUM, but then you have, I mean, if you are, as the cow owner, having to supply water, can you do it? Is it close enough that you can run over there and haul water? Or are you having to hire someone to do that? What are the associated costs? Because that $30 is just going to the grass owner. Other questions or comments? And it's a lot warmer than where I'm going to be tomorrow night.
How about a hand for Jeff Trevor?